Live and We're Local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll figure out how to navigate the Maritime Festival. Artists learn how to create a sustainable existence. We'll also hear how to participate in the Blessing of the Fleet this weekend, and we'll listen to a new podcast that interviews famous Alaskan writers. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here, coming up on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Scattered rain showers today with highs around 50. Tonight, partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, patchy fog, rain likely. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's members of parliament have voted overwhelmingly to invite the Pope to apologize for past abuses of Indigenous people at Indian residential schools. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Native leaders say the personal apology is a necessary step towards reconciliation.
The government-funded church-run schools operated from about the mid-1800s to the late 1900s. About 150,000 Native, Inuit, and Métis children were forced to attend as a way of assimilating them into white society. But thousands were physically, sexually, and emotionally abused. Of the four churches that operated the schools, the Anglican, Presbyterian, and United Churches have formally apologized. So too has the Canadian government, and a multi-billion dollar compensation settlement was reached with survivors of the schools. In March, Canada's bishop said that while the Pope expressed regret for past wrongs, he could not personally apologize. And the Conference of Bishops said it was the role of Canada's bishops, not the Pope, to work towards reconciliation. Native leaders have said that's not good enough. Perry Bellegarde is the National Chief of Canada's Assembly of First Nations.
The Catholic Church had the majority of students go through their systems. And so we feel it's only right, it's only fitting, you know, that the Pope do come to apologize, because it's part of healing. It's part of reconciliation. You know, the Pope made apologies to the Indigenous people of Bolivia. He made apologies to the Irish. And so First Nations people don't deserve, you know, no less. And it's really part of healing. It's part of closure. It's part of moving on.
It was the Pope's decision that caused some MPs to launch the motion in the Canadian Parliament to invite him to formally apologize. The motion also included a call for the church to compensate survivors and turn over any relevant church documents that applied to the residential schools. The vote in Parliament asking for a personal apology passed overwhelmingly, 269-10. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
After a year of negotiations, the Sitka Tribe of Alaska has entered into partnership with the National Park Service to co-manage the historical interpretation at a park. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Sitka Tribe of Alaska is partnering with the National Park Service to manage most of the interpretation programs at Sitka National Historical Park. But Tribal Council Chairwoman Kathy Hope Erickson wonders if interpretation is the right word.
I've been joking with a lot of people about it. Why do we call it interpretation when we're telling our own story? And so I was talking with Lisa today, and we came up with the thought that we would like to have that unit named a Tlingit name.
Lisa is Lisa Gassman, General Manager with Sitka Tribe of Alaska. They're both visibly excited to be more involved with how Sitka's history is shared, especially in a place so important to Tlingit people. Sitka National Historical Park is home to the Tlingit Fort site Shishkanu and Battleground, where the Kiksadi Tlingit clashed with Russian-led forces in 1804. The park also maintains the Russian Bishop's House as a museum, one of the oldest remaining structures of Russian America. Erickson says the tribe would lead interpretation programs in that building as well.
Our tribal people have been a big part of not only the park, but also the Orthodox Church and life with the bishop. And so we'll be able to tell it from our perspective.
This compact agreement is historic, the first in the nation in which a tribe will lead interpretation and education services for a national park. It is also precedent-setting, though the mechanisms for tribal governments to pursue park management have been in place since the 1990s. The annual funding agreement is being reviewed by Congress. Should no opposition arise within a 90-day period, it will take effect on May 7th of this year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by First Tribal Lending, NMLS 15009, the nation's most experienced Section 184 lending team. Info for home loans on and off the reservation available at onetribal.com. That's the numeral onetribal.com. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is Courtney Nelson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You're here representing the Juno Economic Development Council. Briefly, would you say what you do for them there?
So this year, I am jumping in and helping them put on the 9th Annual Maritime Festival.
Woohoo! The 9th annual. Mm-hmm. Were you around for the first?
I have been to almost every single maritime festival in different capacities. Like one time I was in the marinade contest. One time I was a judge for the marinade contest. One time I sang. I've just constantly changing roles there, but I love the festival.
And that's what you're here to talk about today. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite events. But for those who don't know, tell the good people a little bit about the festival.
So the festival has traditionally taken place down on the docks up until last year when we got the new Alaska steamship dock. And so that was the first time that it was put on that floating dock. So everything kind of moved down there. But we still have stuff spreading out from the library basically all the way over to the Seadrome dock with activities.
And for those who might not be familiar with where those docks are, can you give us a little bit of orientation?
So the steamship dock is basically just to the right of the library if you're looking out at the water.
Okay.
So there's a couple new docks, and this one you will not be able to miss it on the day of the festival, which, by the way, is May 12th. And there's going to be a lot of activity, so you won't be able to miss it.
You mentioned the marinade contest. Mm-hmm. I also really like the filleting contest, which is so impressive. I aspire to be at that level. And then there's lots of other things like vendor booths and music and food. We'll talk about all that stuff. But
yep.
Is there anything new or different this year that you haven't done in previous years?
Yeah, so this year, traditionally this festival is, the funds are raised at a port to starboard dinner. And that usually happens the night before or a couple nights before. In the last few years, there's been a progressive dinner put on by Juno Food Tours. One time it was up at the top of the tram. And this year, we really wanted to bring the maritime theme to the dinner and actually have a port to starboard. So we got an Allen Marine catamaran, and we're going to be putting on two port to starboard cruises during the festival. So it's going to be completely integrated. And so the first one is at 11:30. It leaves from the Seadrome dock. And it's going to have a really delicious brunch. And it is Mother's Day coming up. And it's the same weekend. So if you are looking for an amazing experience for your mom and yourself, take her on to one of these cruises. So the 11:30 cruise is a brunch cruise. It leaves the harbor, and it's going to have Luke Weld, who's an amazing piano player. Jocelyn Miles will be singing, and she's got the Brown Sugars backing her up. So a beautiful jazz experience plus food, and you'll be cruising around the harbor. And during the time that that boat's on the water, which is 2 hours, there's so much going on. We've got the sailboat regatta. We've got the canoe. The One People Canoe Society is going to be opening up the whole festival. And then after that cruise is over, we have a 3 to 5 o'clock cocktail maritime cruise. And we've got DJ Manu. So if you guys don't know DJ Manu, he's all over town.
He's quite good. He DJed Wearable Art.
Yes.
Among many other things.
Yes, he's so good. So DJ Manu is going to be on the 3 to 5 boat. So it's going to be off the hook dance party, and Allen Marine's going to make a signature maritime cocktail for everybody. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. And you can get those tickets at the JEDC website.
Why do they call it a port to starboard cruise?
Well, it's kind of going with that maritime theme where it's like from the front to the back. And so it's just all inclusive and it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of the sponsors of the festival will be aboard. There'll be a silent auction, but it is open to the public because traditionally there's probably been about 125 people that are coming. And this time we're trying to open it up and allow 220 people to participate in the port to starboard.
Wow. So that's the port to starboard cruises, and mm-hmm. then there are also cocktail cruises.
Yes.
Can you say more about those?
Yes. Now, these have been extremely popular as well. So what we've done is Juno Tours, we love them. They donated two of their boats, which hold about 45 people, and so we're going to be running little hour cruises all day long so that everybody has the chance to be on the water. At 11 o'clock, we have our first cruise, which is a Baby Raven cruise. We have Sea Alaska Heritage Institute partnering with us, and they're going to be reading from their Baby Raven series, specifically the Salmon Boy story. So that is really inexpensive because we want people of all ages to be able to get out on the water that day. So it's basically all about the cruises this year. So you can get those tickets online as well, and you can bring your kids. I think the kids are $10 for a cruise in the morning. So if your kids haven't been out on the water, you know, get a ticket. And then at 11:15, we've got some NOAA scientists that are going to be aboard our other second kid cruise. And so that's going to be really fun. And these are all hour-long cruises, these cocktail cruises and kids cruises. So we got the 11 o'clock Baby Raven. We got the 11:15 for the NOAA scientist cruise. So if you've got some really curious kids that want to know about the ocean and the maritime activities, this is the thing for you to do. And then we're going to pull those boats in and we're going to stock them up with, one of them's going to have a Malga distillery. Now, we all know a Malga distillery. So they have graciously donated alcohol for these cruises. So these cruises are only $25, including alcohol. So basically, you'd probably spend $15 at the distillery on drinks, so you're paying $10 for a cruise. The second boat has Port Chilcoot Distillery, and they're coming from Haines, and they're super excited about being here. So go on one, go on two. I don't know.
Good job bringing in the distilleries, especially the ones from Haines.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Well, I love the idea of that, about that. It must have taken quite a lot to get all those coordinated.
Yes,
and organized.
I mean, just organizing those cruises was definitely labor intensive, but I hope it's going to be worth it because I think it's really fun to get it into the harbor and to see Juno from the water.
Definitely. And what about the on-land entertainment? Will there be any live music?
Okay, so we're really excited about the lineup this year. We've got some, we call it dock jams. So the musicians will be down on the floating dock. We have a great lineup. We have Jam is going to open it. And if you're not familiar with that, that's Juno's Alaska Music. I can't remember the last thing on that, but they are the cutest violin players. So we're going to start it off with some violin players. Matters. Juno Alaska Music Matters.
Oh, there you go.
12:15, we have Radio Flyers, and a lot of you saw them. I believe they were playing at the Folk Fest on a Tuesday night in a prime spot. So they've been practicing. They have extended their 15-minute set to be about 25. So those guys have been working really hard. We're really excited about them. And then we have Carlos Danger playing at 1 o'clock, and we have Nicole Church playing at 2:15, and we're really excited about her. This is kind of her debut back into singing. And then we have the Glacier Growlers, and that's a family band, and they've also played under different names at the Folk Festival. And we have Sweet and Salties, and this is Ryan Cortez and Ryland Burrell, excuse me. And they are going to do some kind of jam band stuff. And then we have the Tin Star Pistols, who are going to do a really, really upbeat kind of country pop to close out the dock jams.
Well, the headliners.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm excited for Carlos Danger. How about you?
I am excited about that, too.
All right. What if I'm a vendor and I'd like to set up a booth? How would I do that?
Okay. So vendors, This is a really great opportunity. Last year, we had 5,000 people attend this festival. So
a lot of foot traffic.
If you want to get some exposure for your business, just go ahead and go on to the JEDC website, Maritime Festival. I've got sign-up sheets there for vendors. It's $200 to be a vendor. If you're a profit, for-profit, it's $150 for nonprofits. And then we have discounts if you have your own tent, for example, or you don't need electricity. So, and that is a great opportunity for any vendors. And then we're also looking for sponsors. So if you're a company that would like to sponsor it, and a lot of the sponsorship comes with some of these port to starboard tickets. So great way to bond with your company and have them go on a cruise.
Do you get a lot of folks that come from the cruise ships and check out the festival?
We're hoping. This year there will be one cruise ship in town, and they arrive, I think, at like 8 a.m. So hopefully they will make their way over to us, and that would be really fun.
Well, as you said, you can't miss it, so folks will be coming to see what's going on.
So we also have, if you don't mind, we have some tug-of-war happening on the docks, and we've got some kind of rivalry going right now with the Coasties, and the fire department hasn't really jumped up there, but we have the Coast Guard and I can't remember. I think it's the fisheries people that are going to be duking it out. We also have the really popular tote races. So you get into a fish tote in the ocean, in the channel, and you have two people in there, and it's always a really fun event. We do not have the marinade contest this year, but we do have the fillet contest. There will be a bouncy house, and the bouncy house can accommodate adults. So after your cocktail cruise, come over onto the bouncy house.
You read my mind, Courtney. And is this a rain or shine event?
This is a rain or shine event, and we know that Juneau people, you know, they're tough, and they will come out and support us regardless of the weather. And like I said, we've got cruises, so you can get on a sheltered boat and go out onto the water, and it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. So let's talk again about the details. When and where is this taking place?
Okay. So this is all happening on May 12th down on the Alaska Steamship Dock. We are celebrating the maritime history of Juneau, which is so rich in the maritime history. Speaking of maritime history, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is also going to provide us with someone who's going to be on the 3 to 5 cruise and talk about the halibut hooks, because they have a new exhibit that opened yesterday, May 1st, about fishing in Alaska. So it's really going to tie it all together. And that's kind of what we're doing, is celebrating the fact that we are a fishing town, and we need to celebrate all that that means for all of us. And we also need volunteers for the day of the festival. So, again, you can contact me at the JEDC.org website, or you can email me at cnelson@JEDC.org.
And is the website the best place to find out more information, details?
Yes.
Check out the flyers.
Yep, we've got flyers. We've got the dock jams up there. Tell your friends, get a group of people together, and go on a cocktail cruise, or take your mom to a brunch, or the dancing cruise.
These all sound so great. I'm really excited about the opportunity to get out on the water.
Yep.
Well, Courtney, thanks so much for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
That the tickets are going fast, so if you want to reserve a spot, get on there quickly. And again, all of the proceeds for these ticket sales go directly to the Maritime Festival. And we want to make it to the 10th Maritime Festival. This is the 9th. So we want to keep it going, and we really need your support. And thank you so much, Shelley, for having me on the show.
I'm sure you'll have a great turnout. I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Shelley.
I's the bot that builds the boat. Lies the bay that sails her. Lies the bay that catches the fish and takes them home to Liza.
Oh, hip your partner Sally Brown. Hip your partner Sally Brown. Full go to the Dean Martin's Harbor, all around the circle.
Salt and rice to cover your flake. Cake and tea for supper. Codfish in the spring of the year. Fried in maggoty butter.
Hip,
your partner Sally to go. Hip, your partner Sally Brown. Full boat for the gate, Martin's Harbor, all around the circle.
I don't want your maggoty fish. That's no good for winter. I could buy as good as that down in Bonavista.
Hip, your partner, Sally to bowl. Hip, your partner, Sally Brown. Full boat, trilogy, Martin's Harbor, all around the circle.
I took Liza to a dance. If it but she could travel, and every step that she did take was up to her knees in gravel.
Hip, your partner, Sally to go. Hip, your partner, Sally Brown. Full boat, twiggy, Martin's Harbor, all around the circle.
Susan Wright, she's out of sight. Rebecca wants a border. Old Sal Mulver in the dark, he kissed her in the corner.
Hip, your partner, Sally to go. Hip, your partner, Sally Brown. Full boat for the game, Martin's Harbor, all around the circle.
This is Bird Note. Spring means woodpeckers carving out nest cavities. They're our most familiar bird carpenters. But they aren't the only excavators at work. Tiny nuthatches, which also have chisel-like bills, are exceptional wood carvers. They will chip out nests in wood as tough as utility poles. Some nuthatches coat their nest holes with sticky conifer resin. This may discourage predators or competitors, like squirrels and house wrens, from taking over the nest site. The nuthatches flit above the sap as they come and go. The resin deposited outside red cockaded woodpecker holes is thought to deter predators such as snakes. Very soft tapping may signal a chickadee at work. Even without a chisel for a bill, chickadees can still peck their way into less dense wood, like a knot hole or a decayed section of a trunk. Both males and females ferry out wood chips, creating a cylindrical cavity about 8 inches deep. Finally, the female alone adds a nesting layer of moss, lined with a softer material like fur, to make a soft and warm bed for eggs and nestlings. So listen this spring for bird carpenters, and watch for telltale showers of sawdust. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Support for Bird Note comes from Forterra, saving keystone places for people and nature in the Pacific Northwest.
Are you ready to launch or grow a Southeast Alaska-based business? The Path to Prosperity is seeking innovative businesses and startups for the 2018 competition, where you'll receive award-winning small business support and the chance to win $25,000.
Join us on Tuesday, May 3rd at 5:30 p.m. for a free informational webinar. Visit spruceroot.org for more information and application instructions. This message is brought to you by Spruce Root Community Development and the Nature Conservancy.
NOAA Fisheries reminds you it is illegal to shoot seals and sea lions without an exemption. In low fish years, these animals may become more aggressive due to hunger. Illegally shooting seals or sea lions could tarnish the gold standard reputation of Alaska's sustainable fisheries. Shooting seals or sea lions could result in a fine of up to $20,000 and a year imprisonment. People and seals and sea lions can coexist. To report an incident, please call NOAA Enforcement at 1-800-853-1964. This message brought to you by NOAA Fisheries.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Coming up next, an interview that I did earlier this week with Aaron Landsman, who is coming into town to host a workshop for Alaskan artists called Funding Your Work. Well, hi, Aaron. I'm Shelley Delaney. Thank you for being on a Juno Afternoon, and welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. I understand that you are here to talk about an event that's going to be presented by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, as well as Creative Capital. But before we talk about that, I was just wondering, what is Creative Capital and what is your role there?
So Creative Capital is a kind of multi-pronged organization based in New York, but serving all the states. And it's a funding organization. It creates different kinds of investments in artists who shape the future. And it started in 1999 as a response to the National Endowment for the Arts cutting most individual artist fellowships from their funding roster. And it also combines the best of venture capital work. It's kind of like a venture philanthropy approach. And the work that gets funded directly was the primary program of creative capital. The program was started by Ruby Lerner, who's a real visionary, and Arch Gillies from the Warhol Foundation, kind of got together in 1999 and said, we have to do something to make up the difference that losing these fellowships is going to create. And so they created this really interesting funding structure. And then alongside that funding, we've also developed programs for artists like the workshop that I'm going to do in Juneau, which I'm really looking forward to, that help artists teach other artists skills for managing a career or skills for leveraging a project to create a more stable life. It also combines some strategies from the business world. That's something that creative capital does, I think, a little bit differently than most funders, where we use strategic planning, time management, goal setting, and that kind of thing. And a lot of what we do is really focused on helping artists take risks from a more solid place, whether it's a risk by being more prominent as an underrepresented artist or being an experimental artist or being an artist from a place that isn't normally recognized as a cultural capital and giving that art more attention. So it's a lot about tailoring the work that we do to the needs of artists today. And not saying you have to subscribe to models that other people put in place, but how do you make your own best model that serves your work? And then my role is has been various. So I helped build the program that the workshop is part of, Creative Capital's workshops, alongside Colleen Keegan, who's an arts activist and strategic planner, and Jackie Battenfield, who's a visual artist. We made this workshop 15 years ago and have been teaching it ever since alongside Creative Capital grantees. I'm also a theater artist, so I've been part of focus groups that helped Creative Capital figure out what their funding was going to look like. I helped revamp the granting program back in 2004 so that it was a little bit more equitable for people who were not from major cultural centers or even recognized cultural centers, which was really important to me as a Minnesotan. And so I've had a lot of different roles, but primarily it's been a kind of artist advisor and workshop leader.
And the upcoming workshop is called Funding Your Work, and it's a workshop that's targeted to Alaskan artists. And this may seem like a silly question, but why is it important to attend a workshop like this if you're an artist?
It's not a silly question at all. And I think before I started leading the workshops, I might have asked the same question of a place like Creative Capital. One of the things that has become clear to me and the people that I work with when we teach is that a lot of the skills that we need as artists to manage and sustain our lives and our projects are not taught in art school. And a lot of the ways that those skills are taught is actually counterproductive to artists living the life that they need to live to do their best work. To do their best work. So this workshop is important because it does really basic things like asks you to figure out what your life costs without panicking at the end of the month, and then apply that cost to the time you spend on your work, and then make budgets based on that. A lot of times I think artists get into a situation where we're asked to make budgets based on a funder's expectations, and we never quite do the work of figuring out, like, oh, what would happen if I had more resources at my disposal? So on one hand, it's just about getting the numbers straight so that you can live your best life. And then it's about saying, like, okay, what are all the different ways I can bring resources to my work? How do I bring resources to my work already? So that can include grant funding and individual contributions and things like Kickstarter or GoFundMe. Like, those are the normal kind of funding structures that we see out in the world. But it also might mean barter. It might mean exchange. It might mean someone gives you space and you give them help documenting their show. So I know that my brief experiences in Alaska, I understand that people are coming from remote places, for instance, and that often communities rely on each other to exchange skills and goods and services and even material resources and stuff like that. So this is a way that I think this workshop embraces all of that and doesn't say one kind of funding is right and another kind of funding is wrong. And then the very last thing I'll say is, you know, applying for things like grants and residencies are ways to get your name and your work in front of a panel of experts, thought leaders, curators, and presenters. And so part of this workshop is just focused on how do you put your best foot forward? Like, who are you at your best? And then how do you put that work out on the national scene and have it recognized?
Well, what are some of the expenses that go along with working as an artist? It's more than paint and canvas and clay, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest expense and sometimes the hardest to quantify is time. And so, you know, there have been some studies that have been done by an amazing choreographer and teacher named Andrew Simonet, and he has an organization called Artists U out of Philadelphia. And when he asked artists what was the biggest challenge, a lot of it was having enough time to do work. So that's often the easiest thing to neglect funding, because it's hard, it's abstract. Like, what does my time actually cost? But so time is the biggest one. It's the biggest hitch for people who often have families and other obligations and other jobs and several projects they're managing. So figuring out what your time costs is really the first step. Beyond that, yeah, paint, canvas, of course. Studio space, travel is a big one. I really feel like as an artist who gets to travel for my work, it's been really exciting and important to be in a kind of national or international conversation with the work that I do. And so travel is a big one, I think, for many, many artists. And research is also a thing that is possible to fund, and it's an aspect of work that on the surface of it may not seem fundable because, again, it can be sort of abstract, but that's another part of it for a lot of artists that kind of demands a lot of time and a lot of energy and resources.
Travel would certainly be big for artists in Alaska, I think, whether it's traveling around Alaska or traveling down to the lower 48. Is this the first time the workshop has been taught in Juneau?
This is the first time we've been to Juneau. The Rasmussen Foundation has brought us to Anchorage twice, and this is also later in the week that I'm there in Juneau. There will be a couple of leaders going to Fairbanks for the first time.
Oh, that's exciting. So would this be your first time in Alaska?
No. In fact, my history in Alaska goes back to 1986 because I spent 30 days hiking in the Wrangell-St. Elias Range.
Wow.
And it changed my life. It was a sort of, I was 17 and it was a group of six and it was a kind of outward bound style trip, like very low to the ground wilderness backpacking trip. And it completely changed the course of my life in many, many ways. So I'm grateful to Alaska. And whenever I'm there, I try to spend at least a day. It seems sort of silly to spend only a day, but just given all of our schedules and resources and stuff, I try to do at least one thing. And I'm excited to come to Juneau because I know Perseverance Theater. I know there's a really thriving arts community there. And so having never been there, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I feel like we could do a whole other interview about your experience and the hiking in the wilderness. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
But back to the workshop. It's coming up on May 9th.
Sure, yeah.
It's at 5 o'clock from 5 to 9:30 p.m. at the Prospector Hotel. It's actually right next door to the station here. And
okay.
There is a cost to attend the workshop, but there are stipends available. Is that correct?
That is. So the cost on paper is $200, but there are still some slots left for $150 stipends. So it can really reduce the cost a lot. And I believe we have 14 spots left, 14 stipends left, and that's thanks to the Rasmussen Foundation. So, you know, if the cost at first seems like an issue, please do sign up for one of the stipends if you can. And all you have to do to get the stipend is to talk about how it will serve your work and then report back to JAHC afterwards.
And where can artists go to apply for that stipend?
They can go to the JAHC website, which is jahc.org. And there's also a submittable.com page, which is just jahc.submittable.com/submit. So that might be good to have on the website so they could click to it too.
Yeah, so just go on the JAC website. Is that where they need to go to register for the workshop?
That is, yeah.
All right, fantastic. And is there more information available online about you or about Creative Capital that we can go check out? We want to know more?
Yeah, absolutely. Creative Capital is creative-capital.org. My website as a theater artist is thinaar, but it's spelled thinaar.com.
Cool. All right.
And then go ahead.
Oh, no, no. What else would you like to say?
Okay. Oh, just one other thing to say. You know, I'm a theater artist, but I also work a little bit in the visual art world and I'm writing a book. So I just want to invite artists from any discipline and any background at any level of their careers. I think the workshop is really useful, and I feel very comfortable working with artists, working very specifically from lots of different traditions, backgrounds, aesthetics, and media. So we'd be thrilled to have as diverse a group as possible. And I know the Rasmussen Foundation has also been excited when the group can kind of feed each other through their diversity.
I think this workshop sounds like a fantastic resource for artists. And many thanks to the Jack and to Creative Capital and to you and the Rasmussen Foundation for making it affordable and providing those stipends. So again, the workshop is coming up on May 9th. It's 5 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the Prospector Hotel. Attendees do need to register in advance, and they can go do that at the Jack's website. Aaron Landsman, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just that I'm really excited to come to Juneau, and I thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks for talking to me today.
Big enough for what I'm going to draw today. There are no letters tall enough for what I've got to say. But for the mountains are not mine, I run outside the lines, I run outside the hands, I run outside. For what I'm going to draw today. Oh, grass stains on your knees. That's good. And dirt on your nails. That's good. And pain on all my jeans. Alright. Follow the sun trees. Yeah, alright. I used to want a trademark toy. Now I only want my space. Hey, I want a room with empty walls. I want more bricks and paper things. Oh, look how tall I wrote my name. 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 Oh, I want a word that says it all. I want more bricks and paper.
We're excited to announce that NPR correspondent and host Melissa Block will be doing a special event with KTOO. Join us May 9th at 7 p.m. at the Jack to hear stories from her reporting travels around the world that reveal intimate insights into people's lives. Melissa will share a behind-the-scenes look at the craft and joy of radio storytelling. Only 300 tickets are available. Purchase yours at ktoo.org. This event with Melissa Block is made possible with support from LifeMed and Bartlett Regional Hospital.
KTOO Public Media with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council invite you to the final art classes of the season, May 10th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom. Patty Jopi will lead an evening of watercolor exploration, during which participants will create local scenes, including sunsets across the canals, on specially designed watercolor greeting cards. All supplies included, no host bar, and food available for purchase. Tickets at jahc.org.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's 22 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Carl Broderson, president of the board of the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry, I got you on the wrong mic there. There we go. Say hello again, Carl.
Hello. Thank you very much.
You're here today to talk about the Blessing of the Fleet, a meaningful and timely ceremony just ahead of the Maritime Festival, which is coming up next weekend.
Yep.
But before we talk about that, can you tell me a bit about the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial?
Yeah, it has two primary goals. One is to just emphasize the importance of commercial fishing in Alaska, and then also to serve as a place for quiet introspection and as a place to remember folks that families have lost, because fishing is a very dangerous industry. And there are some people on the wall who were never recovered from the ocean, and so for them it's the only gravesite they have.
When was the memorial constructed?
I don't know. I should have looked that up. But if you want to look on our website, akcfmemorial.org, there's a beautiful history on there. It was, I think, early mid-90s. It took a while to get it going, but the blessings have been going on for even longer. And this is the 28th annual.
And what is the role of the Memorials Board, of which you are the head?
Current head, anyway, I always like to say optimistically. No, I love this job. Just to administrate, to make sure that people have a human point of contact when they want to add a name, to make sure that people are qualified, by which I mean just a person was a part of the commercial fishing industry, and to just generally advocate for those families and for the wall itself.
What does the memorial mean to you? What motivated you to be a part of this group?
One says I have names on the memorial, so in my case I have several names on the memorial, and there are folks that I care about. Plus I also see the good that it does for the broader community of families that have names, and I you know, the grieving is an ongoing process. I mean, there are names that have been out there for the entire, you know, 20-plus years that the memorial has been around, and folks are still grieving for them. And so if we can have a meaningful ceremony for those families, then it's a good thing, and I like being able to be a part of that.
The annual blessing of the fleet and reading of the names is taking place this Saturday, May 5th at 10 a.m. Could you please tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's a very similar to itself every single year sort of program. We like to be consistent. We'll begin with a speaker. We have Francis Leach. She's the executive director of United Fishermen of Alaska. And then Father Gordon Blue from Holy Trinity will bless the fleet. The boats will come by in front of the memorial, and they will have the appropriate type of water flung at them. And I always like to joke that apparently it wears off after about a year, so folks get to come back every May. It's a nice way to start out the season. And then we will read all of the names that are on the memorial.
And you yourself will be reading the names?
Yes.
Is that an emotional experience for you?
It certainly can be, yeah. It's the sort of thing that hits you more afterwards. I suppose like being a doctor, you need to be somewhat clinical in the moment. But, I mean, there is a moment where I read my parents' names, my grandparents' names, or names of other people that I knew, or where I particularly know the situation that ended up resulting in them being on the memorial. And I want to emphasize, you know, some people have long, great, wonderful lives, and this is a testament to that. And in other cases, it's somebody who probably met a fairly tragic end, where their time was all too short and the circumstances were very unfortunate. And it's important to remember that it's both of those. It's not all sad, but that when you come across somebody in that list where you know what a difficult experience they had at the end of their life, it's hard not to feel anything.
I'm very sorry to hear about your family.
Thank you. They're one of many.
How many years have you been the reader of the names?
Long enough that I can't remember, so wow. That probably means 4 or 5.
And do you know the names most recently added to the list, who they were and when they were added?
So the memorial is in May, so of course that means that the engravings are done in June or afterwards. But, yeah, we have 7 new names. Some of them are folks that applied right after the ceremony last May, and others are people who passed away last month. There's a whole spectrum there. But, yeah, we have 7 new ones, and that'll bring us up to 225.
Sad. Well, I'm glad you're doing what you do. Thank you for doing what you do. The ceremony, I know, means a lot to a lot of people. Where can we find out more information about the memorial or the details of the blessing of the fleet?
I can Google it, or that'll help you find akcfmemorial.org, Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial in Juneau.
Anything else you'd like to add?
It's a wonderful, moving event, and I encourage everyone to come out.
All right. Thanks for being here today, Carl.
Thank you.
Hi! Homebridge with the Juneau School District isn't just for big kids. By enrolling in Homebridge, you can use the generous allotment for students in grades K through 8 and apply it towards your child's homeschool education. Call 523-1821 for further information.
Jazz you soon won't forget. Gary Motley Trio brings a lifetime of jazz to Juneau Jazz and Classics. Motley and his trio will be joined by clarinetist Richard Stoltzman and Mika Stoltzman playing the marimba with Jazz at the Jack, Friday, May 18th at 7:30. Tickets at Hearthside, the Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Gary Motley Trio and the Stoltzmans, music for the heart and soul.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my final guest today is Katie Bosler. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Shelley.
Is this your first time on the radio, Katie?
Not exactly. I kind of make a habit of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. You're here a lot. So today, you're here representing 49 Writers.
Yes.
Would you please start us off by telling the audience a bit about 49 Writers and your role in the organization?
Yes. 49 Writers is a networking and support nonprofit organization for writers in Alaska. So these are creative writers, poets, fiction, nonfiction, essayists. You don't have to be a published writer. It's really just a means for connecting with other writers, workshopping with other writers, and also we bring in guest authors to do workshops or readings. There's a lot of events in Anchorage, but we have some in Juneau as well, some of them filtered on down here. I'm on the board. Amy Hook, or Hauk, was on the board for many years. Now she is a part-time employee of 49 Writers. She's moving to Cordova, as a matter of fact. So we are actually looking for another board member or two here in Juneau. But it's just a really kind of nice way to connect with like-minded, if you will, artists in the state.
Yeah. And what do you do for 49 Writers?
Well, as a board member, you know, anything from we organized and carried out a very successful writer's retreat out at the Shrine the first weekend of April. We're planning more of those, hopefully in the fall and spring, one each. We also have social events. We have, for example, Nancy Lord, who's a former writer laureate. She came down and did a workshop here in Jeanette McPheeters Hall. So we kind of organized and hosted that. So a variety of things. But something that's kind of new and was suggested, or a version of it anyway, was suggested by our director, Jeremy Pataki, is some kind of a podcast type thing. And I thought, hey, that's something I think I might be able to help with. And what we're doing, making it as an addendum to, we have the other thing that's really cool about 49 Writers, please listen up. There is a great forum for you to be published, if you will, online. It's the 49 Writers blog. So we have a blog where you can write about craft or do a book review or something that, you know, you're kind of crafting an essay or a poem on. But also the addendum is something called Active Voice Writers Respond. And that is something that we put together about a year ago, not long after the election of 2016, as a place for writers to respond. How are they dealing with the current, I say, upheaval on many levels in our country, politically, environmentally, et cetera, et cetera.
And you're here today to talk more about the Active Voice podcast. Is that sort of an extension of the blog?
Yes, exactly. And the podcast is something that, you know, we've been talking about and working on for a number of months now, and finally this is our debut, if you will.
Yeah. Should we listen to a little snippet?
Yeah, let's listen to a little snippet.
Which one would you like to hear first?
Why don't we take a listen to Vivian Faith Prescott? Now, Juneau listeners, many of you are familiar with Vivian Faith Prescott because she was the featured writer for Tidal Echoes this year, and she's from Wrangell. So this is I did an interview with Vivian, and this is her take on her role as a writer in these times.
I think a lot of my work now seems to be witness. We are witnessing so many things as artists, as writers, performers. We need to write this down. We need to sing it. We need to play it. We need to, because we are documenting things that 100 years from now, people will pick up a book, they'll listen to a piece, they'll watch a play, they'll look at art on the wall, and hopefully it'll tell our perspectives, our stories, our warnings, our whatever.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So she really encapsulates it right there. And she's been kind of an activist, I guess you could say, writer, poet for many, many years now, and just a fascinating person. And the thing I've really enjoyed about this, too, is, you know, you think about, well, you can have a forum, say, where you invite people to come hear a panel of writers or a writer or two. But people are so busy here. We have so much going on. And if it's a sunny evening, good luck. So in this case, it was just, let's bring the writers to you and leave it up to you. If you want to just click on the podcast, you can take a listen.
You're the interviewer or host of the podcast.
Yeah.
Do the discussions have a particular focus apart from an overview of the author, their current work, et cetera?
It's really kind of, it's individual. It's really the writer's take on how they're if they feel, for example, Nancy Lord, former writer laureate, we have an upcoming podcast with her to be produced. And, you know, she feels very strongly that self-indulgent writing these days is just not going to cut it, that there's so much going on with the larger world and with people besides ourselves that we have a duty to write it. Other people, like Hank Linfer of Gustavus, who wrote The Faith of Cranes, a beautiful book published 2011 and is now completing a biography of Richard Nelson, who's kind of an iconic writer from Sitka. His take is that we still are surrounded by beauty, and we can choose what we want to focus on.
Let's listen to his clip.
There is no shortage of ugliness in this world, but there is no shortage of beauty either. And I've given myself permission to focus on that beauty. And part of that permission comes from the recognition that the world needs to be reminded of all the beauty. And so my work now as a writer and as a recorder of natural sounds is to stand up and say, listen, pay attention. Here's a story of beauty. Here's a beautiful voice. Give it a read. Give it a listen.
Nice.
Yes, and that was, I found, particularly uplifting to talk to Hank about what's happening these days.
When did the podcast debut, and how often will we get new episodes?
Well, it's just debuting now, so it's actually up to the listener. If you can go online to 49writers.org, and if you go to the click on the blog and then from there go to the Active Voice link, you'll see kind of in the middle of the page there a link to our Active Voice blog. Or you could go to SoundCloud, and the SoundCloud address, just looking it up here, I think it is, if you go to soundcloud.com/49writers, and it's just the numbers 49 and then writers. Is that what you have down there?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Shelley is a definitely a together June afternoon host. I am impressed. Yes. There. So that's how you can listen. And so what we have so far online is we have Hank Linfer and Vivian Faith Prescott. We're working on getting Nancy Lord's interview up, as well as Kim Hecox, also from Gustavus. And we have plenty of our authors, many of them from Southeast Alaska, yet to interview. So we hope to talk to Ernestine Hayes, Ishmael Host, Hope, Lance Twitchell, Kate Troll. There's several people just right here in Juneau.
That's true. Well, this is a great project, Katie. Congratulations on a successful launch.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, you might want to switch hats real quick.
Yes.
Give you a second.
Okay.
So you can quickly, in our last minute or so, plug an event going on at Bartlett Regional Hospital. So what was it that you wanted to mention?
Well, not necessarily a plug, but it is an awareness. And that is that tomorrow, in my role as the Bartlett Regional Hospital Community Relations Director, I want to let you know that we are holding a campus-wide, that's a hospital-wide, mass casualty exercise. That's going to take place from 8 a.m. to about 1, 2 p.m. So this is for staff and providers to train through FEMA's incident command system for like a FAW, like bus accident kind of thing, and a fire and capital city risk, fire and rescue, CCFR. Ambulances will participate, and we also have volunteers.
Cool.
Who are going to be bystanders. Do I have a minute to talk about volunteers? Or
just about 30 seconds.
Okay. So there is a continental breakfast and lunch if you want to be a volunteer, but you got to show up at 8 o'clock.
Okay. That's the catch. And that's this Saturday.
This is actually tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
sorry.
Thursday.
So if you see something crazy going on at the hospital.
Yeah. Just realize it's an exercise.
It's an exercise.
Yes.
KDB, thanks so much for being here today and giving us that wonderful information about the new podcast, 49 Riders, and also your Bartlett Regional Hospital activities.
Thank you, Shelley.
Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in today to Juno Afternoon. Be sure and check out the Blessing of the Fleet this Saturday at 10 a.m. and get ready to participate in head out to the Maritime Festival and have a great time next Saturday, May 12th. And also don't forget about the upcoming workshop for artists. Have a great Juno evening.